This episode of The Incubator is proudly sponsored by Chiesi. Providing innovative neonatology solutions for more than 35 years, Chiesi is committed to supporting the neonatology community and the NICU families you serve. To learn more, visit www.nicuconnections.com/incubator.
This is The Incubator, a weekly discussion about new advances in neonatology and the fascinating individuals who make this progress possible. I am Dr. Ben Korsha.
And I'm Dr. Daphne Yasova-Barbeau. We are neonatal intensive care physicians.
Welcome.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Incubator Podcast. We have another episode of Tech Tuesday ready for you. Daphne, how are you this morning?
I'm doing really well. We have been trialing this exciting product, so I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, we're a little biased. Are a little biased, and so
we told our listeners that we would be totally transparent about things that we bring onto the podcast.
Yeah. We're never bringing on anybody, especially on Tech Tuesday, where we have a vested interest in how a company is doing. But for example, in this case, we have the pleasure of having with us today Torsten Walacek, who is the CEO of a company called NeoPredix, and it is a company that has a very interesting tool to make predictions about bilirubin levels. We'll talk about that. Torsten, thank you so much for being on with us this morning.
My pleasure. Hi, Daphne. Hi, Ben.
How are you? So for people who are not familiar with NeoPredix, I'm going to give you the mic to give us like a quick intro as to what it is and what is its intended use.
Absolutely. So NeoPredix, we are a Swiss-German digital health startup. We are a spin-off from the University of Basel in Switzerland. And NeoPredix is built on the foundation of uniting the most up-to-date technologies with clinical decision-making to deliver precision medicine to all patients under the maternal, neonatal, and perinatal umbrella. And so we are very focused on the first 1,000 days of life. And here in Europe, it's not a standard expression. What we mean by the first 1,000 days of life is from conception all the way through the second birthday. But we have an even more special focus on the time around birth. And we are very focused on that, and we want to help clinicians to make more informed decisions. So we claim to have the leading platform in predictive, maternal, and neonatal clinical decision support tools.
I think that's very exciting because there's a lot of talks about ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, and I think in the medical community there is a sense of like, well, what does that mean for us on a day-to-day basis in terms of how can we leverage these tools for taking better care of our neonates? And I think, as we've talked on the podcast before, some of these tools are like the early onset sepsis risk calculator and things like that. Mm-hmm. But how do we actually bring in predictive algorithms into the NICU? I think NeoPredix is the company that is trying to do that on multiple fronts. Now, for the sake of brevity and for clarity, I think it's important to mention that NeoPredix is a large umbrella company that's going to try to focus on predictive algorithms for multiple aspects of neonatal care. But at this time, if people are interested in NeoPredix, the tool that you have available, which is the tool that Daphne and I are using in our NICU, is the tool to predict levels of bilirubin. Is that correct?
Yes. So the way I like to put it is we can predict the dynamic progression of bilirubin. And how we do this, and I think this is part of your question, and you mentioned ChatGPT and other tools. In my mind, honestly, there's a lot of hype around that, not only in the medical community, but all over the place, right? So I would like to kind of scale that back a little bit, because in my mind, we didn't call it artificial intelligence 20 years ago. We called it fuzzy logic, for example. But decision tools, whether in the medical environment or outside the medical environment, have been around for quite some time. And I think that that hype will calm down again. And then we are able to really focus on the outcome, which in our case is what we want to bring to the table, to our customers, to clinicians, in the end, to the benefit of patients, is to really have more informed decisions. And our approach mm-hmm. is a combination of physiological data, biological data, and pharmacological understanding, plus mathematical expertise. And of course, to make sense out of all of these tons of data points, we need to use tools like artificial intelligence, machine-based learning. But in the end, it's math. And by combining all of this expertise, we are able to provide our customers, the clinicians, a sneak preview into the future. And if we, and I'm totally convinced that is an added value, if we can help you, clinicians, to understand what will happen within the next 24, 48, maybe 60 hours, we hope to put you into a more proactive situation, because then you don't need to wait for symptoms. You can proactively address situations that will occur in the near-term future.
Uh-huh. And I think that's really the difference between, say, units who are maybe using the Billy tool website, that this can show you data points over time for a particular patient, but then it actually shows you what is anticipated to occur over the subsequent 60 hours. Can you tell us more specifically, like, what that looks like on the interface?
Absolutely. So we, and the first tool that we started a few months ago to commercialize in the United States, that's the one you're referring to, is what we call NeoPredix B1, bilirubin mm-hmm. prediction. So we can predict the dynamic progression of bilirubin for up to 60 hours into the future based on the last bilirubin measurement in the hospital. Now, there's two ways to measure bilirubin nowadays, at least. There's total serum, so blood-based, and there's transcutaneous measurement of bilirubin through the skin. We can use both types of data points. We just need to know what it is, if it's TSB or TCB. Transcutaneous or total serum. And at minimum, we need two data points. If you have three or four, it's a little better, but we can work with two. And then we need just a handful of physiological data from the specific patient. Birth weight, date of birth, if that is not available, 0.0. We don't care about the date. It's just we need a 0 hour somewhere. The birth weight I mentioned, gestational age at birth. And very important, the mode of delivery, C-section versus vaginal, makes a huge difference. Plus, two or more bilirubin data points. And putting mm-hmm. that together, we can actually forecast, predict the next 60 hours. And we don't predict an endpoint. We really show you a dynamic curve. Basically, think about it as a in 6 minute increments. And of course, we put a curve through it, but it's a step by step by step prediction over the next 60 hours into the future. So if you have to make a discharge decision after, let's say, I ask you, what is the typical discharge age of a, 38-weeker vaginal delivery, everything's fine?
Yeah, I would say 48 to 72 mm-hmm. hours of life is when that discharge will usually happen.
Yeah, so let's say at 48 hours, approximately, you are at the point where you think about a discharge decision. And at that point, if there's two measurements available, we can show you how, for this particular patient, bilirubin levels will develop into the future. And based on that, you can make a discharge or not discharge decision. That's yours. That's not ours. We don't indicate anything. We just show you how that will develop and potentially prepare the patient, the parents in our case for why a follow-up within the next 24 to 48 hours. And we absolutely follow the new AAP guidelines for hyperbilirubinemia. Mm-hmm. So according to that, you can actually also better plan at what point of time parents should bring back the baby, because you pretty much know what will happen in the next 48 hours.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think you're describing a tool that sounds really good. And I think it's important for me to mention that as someone who's used it, the tool looks really good too. So for example, mm-hmm. the graph is so comprehensive because you'll have your data point that you've collected, whether it is the serum or the cutaneous measurements. And then you'll have this forecast which has like a a range of where the prediction model will tell you the bilirubin should fall in the coming days. And what's interesting is that you can then overlay on top of that the newest phototherapy guidelines. So you will be able to see whether a baby technically has a high risk of crossing that threshold and really needing phototherapy. You can generate a PDF out of this. You can bring it into the room. And I think when you are, when parents are asking you like, well, but why are you not discharging us today? Or why are you discharging us if it's not safe? Then when you bring this visually, it is so easy to explain and so easy to understand that for us, at least, it's made conversation with families much more streamlined. I guess the follow-up question is, how do you guys get this prediction? What kind of data is this based on? And yeah, I'm curious if you can answer that question.
Yeah, and first of all, I would like to say thank you because you just basically confirmed what we intended to do. And in the industry and some as a tool provider, if you will, not as a medical device, as a tool provider, of course, it's very rewarding to get that feedback that because we can develop whatever we want to, what we think is great, but if it doesn't help you in your daily practice, it's worthless. So I'm very, very happy for that feedback. Thank you for that. To answer your question, so of course we had to train to train the algorithm and then to validate the algorithm. That is standard practice, of course, in the industry and also outside medical. So we used initial data sets that came from two university hospitals in Germany and in Switzerland to really understand the dynamics of bilirubin. And I think one of the key findings was that there's dozens of influencing factors, and you know better than I do which ones those are, dozens of influencing factors that have an impact on the bilirubin levels. But based on deep data research, we came up with this very short list that I just mentioned, gestational age, birth weight, et cetera, that really make a difference. Pretty much the rest is only background noise. So I think that was the first huge step in our development that we were able to, you know, don't look at all of the noise in the background, but really look at the data that is important, that really makes a difference. So there was step one. Again, we used a couple of thousand data sets from babies in Germany and in Switzerland. Then to get a better understanding, because Germany, Switzerland, of course, is a very similar patient population, we looked at the Mediterranean population in Europe, because now I have to think slowly and speak slowly because I always mix it up. In the Mediterranean population, there is a significantly higher incidence of G6PD. That was right, correct? Then in the European or even in the American population. So we connected with a university hospital in Greece and received a very large data set of Greek babies, making sure that we cover that specific incidence. And then because we just wanted to make sure, and especially because of the transcutaneous measurements through the skin, a skin color can have an impact, not on bilirubin itself, but on the measured value. So we wanted to make sure that we also cover that. And thus we connected with a hospital in Kenya, actually, to make sure to also have data from that population. And we very strictly separated the data sets which we used to train the population from the data sets we used to validate the algorithm. Last but not least, because the regulatory authorities in Europe versus the United States, when it comes to predictive analytics, have very different approaches at the moment. So here in Europe, we had to run a prospective clinical trial, which we did, which generated a new data set, was a multi-center clinical trial in Germany, which has been published, which is available, which again we used for new validation. So actually, it was trained with various data sets. With new data sets, we ran the first validation. Then with the new prospective study that generated completely new data, we validated the second time. And now, since we are active in the United States and have first customers and reference sites, we collected American data and used that again for another validation. As we say, validation never ends. So that was the step-by-step approach, making sure that we have a really large sample size, a couple of thousand babies from various populations around the world.
And I think that's a very important point, because as clinicians, that validation is something that puts our minds at ease. And I think these articles are readily available. If you look for them, I think in Frontiers, the journal called Frontiers is where you'll find the latest one. There's also publications in the Journal of the in Pediatric Research. So there are publications that have looked at this in sequential time frame. So it's very, very reassuring.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I actually appreciate you walking us through that process, because I feel like I learned a lot about just how models are validated. So I think that's really neat. As someone who's actually not that tech savvy, I find the tool very easy to use also, you know, easy to kind of store the data. Maybe that is a concern that people might have about storing patient data. Maybe you can speak a little bit to that as well.
Of course, and that is a very valid concern, and we should be concerned. So that also brings me, and I will answer your question, and I will add a second answer to that, because that's also an important part when we all currently in this hype, as we address it, or as I called it, think about artificial intelligence. But to answer your question directly, we want to store data for a certain amount of time, so you as the user, as clinicians, can go back to it and look at it again. Because you discharged the baby and maybe for whatever reason might be readmitted and then the data is gone, that wouldn't be helpful. So for a certain amount of time, we store the data on our servers, HIPAA-compliant servers in the United States. But that is depending on customer hospital preference. In general, we suggest to delete the data 14 days after discharge, unless the customer tells us differently. But this is the way that we propose it, and that's what we do, and we are contractually obliged to do so. So we don't store data in the long run, not even in the midterm. 2 weeks is not long. And that also shows that we don't use any patient data to continuously change our algorithm, and that makes a huge difference. As I mentioned, we use all of these various tools to develop the algorithm and to train the algorithm. But once we decided, okay, that's it, and then it was successfully validated, and we and our customers and the regulatory authorities are happy with the result, we, as I say it, we close the algorithm. It's not a self-learning tool. And that makes all the difference because it will always behave the same way. So you or nobody else needs to be concerned. Anybody else doesn't need to be concerned about, okay, today this algorithm behaves this way. Tomorrow, 55 more babies are in the algorithm, and that might change the algorithm. Will not happen with ours. If we feel that we have any indication that we can further improve our algorithm, make it even more specific, or maybe extend the prediction timeline, I mean, there are various ways to continuously improve it, we will release a new version of the algorithm, but it will not be a self-learning algorithm. And that makes a difference. And I can only suggest that not only you specifically, but anybody who is working with algorithms, always ask yourself the question, well, is that self-learning? Which doesn't mean it's bad, but it means that it will behave the next 10 minutes different than 10 minutes before, because it's self-learning, continuously changing. What we do is it's closed, it's stable, and if we feel we can improve it, we will, and then release a new version.
Yeah, and maybe to clarify, from the user end, the value in quote unquote storing data is really those bilirubin points for a specific patient. So you open it, you document it at one time point, you come back 6 hours later, the time point is there, you can put in the next time point. So without having to re-input all of the original information, and you can use a bed space number, you could use a random patient identifier. So there are lots of opportunities that way to keep patients straight on the app.
Absolutely. And what we also offer is integration, if wanted, if requested, into electronic medical records. So we started working with Epic, and we are approved third-party supplier to Epic. So if a customer is using Epic and wants to integrate, there's various levels of integration, or actually my IT team taught me many times, don't say integration, say connectivity. So there's various ways of connecting to Epic or similar systems, which then really is a very smooth integration in this case into your daily workflow. Because the moment you look at the patient data, you just basically say, I want this baby to see the bilirubin prediction. We pull the data necessary and push back the result to you and show it. Again, there's various ways to do that in your workspace, in your screen, the way you're used to it. We started working with Epic. The next step will be Cerner. In Europe, we started working with SAP. There's very many different versions of electronic medical records here in Europe, which makes it a little bit more difficult. And on top, if that is not wanted, or if it's not possible, because some customers use some unique systems, then we also offer a standalone platform, which you can access from any internet-connected device. Again, as I mentioned, everything's hosted on HIPAA-compliant servers in the United States.
Well, I know we're getting to the end of our session with you, and we've learned so much. I guess maybe without divulging any major company secrets, you know, what's next? Like, what's on the horizon for predictive models in medicine, and, you know, especially our listeners in neonatal care?
Yeah, I love that question, and my team always tells me, okay, Thorsten, don't say too much, but I want to because I dedicated really the last 20 years of my professional life to newborn care, or specifically to neonatal care, and I developed over the time my, if you will, personal mission, and this is to make sure that every baby has the best possible start into life. And whenever I get engaged in projects and companies, in ideas where I see, well, this is alongside this mission, then I'm just super excited and constantly want to talk about it. So, of course, I will answer your question. We are a participant in the Mayo Clinic Accelerate platform program, and with support from the Mayo Clinic, we are currently developing a maternal predictive algorithm. And as I mentioned, we are looking at the first 1,000 days of life, which include from the point of conception, and our focus at this point is on preeclampsia. So I cannot talk about how that will work and for exactly how long we can predict and what exactly we can predict, but this is our next big project we are currently working on, to develop a predictive algorithm on the topic of preeclampsia. And the interesting thing is that this idea of using pharmacometrics, AI, machine-based learning, and really deep medical understanding, and the founders of the companies, both are medical doctors, is that it can be applied to so many different areas. Again, we focus on the first 1,000 days of life, and we'll make sure that step by step we are providing a platform. Not all of the tools will be predictive, but all of the tools will be applicable for this very special time of life for a human being. And all of the tools will be clinical decision support tools that help you to understand data points better, to sometimes look into the future, but all with the idea to help you to improve medical outcome and to put you into a proactive situation to make decisions. So next step, preeclampsia, and we are working on a handful of additional projects as a small startup company. It's a phased approach, step by step. We can't do everything at once, despite the fact that I would love to do that. But if you think about the top 10 challenges around the time of birth or specifically for newborn babies, if you think about the top 10, on 5 of those top 10 topics we are working on.
Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Yeah, and you alluded to this, your track record in the in the not just the healthcare space but the neonatal healthcare space is impeccable, and I think you have a long track record of excellence in that area. So I think it only adds to, I think, the credibility of the work you're doing and the quality of the work that you're doing as well. I think the question that I just wanted to close with is, how easy is it? Let's say somebody is listening and says, I'm actually quite interested. We have so many babies where we're always unsure. What should we be doing at around the time of discharge? This tool could be helping me. How do I get this in the hands of my clinician? What is the best way to get this done, Torsten?
Yeah, very simple. Our website, neopredix.com, offers a very simple site where you can sign up for a free of charge demo. Since this is all digital, and of course in the digital age, we don't need to travel for that. We can set up an online appointment. We have a team in the United States as well as in Europe, so even time difference doesn't matter to us. So whatever is convenient for our customers, we can set up a time within 48 hours, really short notice, to show whomever who's interested an online demo via Microsoft Teams or Zoom. Again, we are very flexible to give a first outlook, to give a first taste. And if this is still of interest, after that first demo, which even with question and answer takes maximum 30 minutes, we can also do it in 20 minutes if the timing is very tight. If then there's more interest, we can set up that specific clinic with a demo account, give clinicians access to our system. We offer at a minimum 4 weeks free of charge testing of our system, which is absolutely unlimited. There is no loops, no hoops you have to go through. You get an access code, and it's in the protective environment. Again, HIPAA compliant, no long-term storage of data. And if a clinic decides for whatever reason that it's not for them, all data will be deleted, no harm done, and no expenses except for time invested are necessary. And if after a few weeks of a demo access, the customer decides this is something that is of interest and they want to use long-term, then of course we make an offer. Again, depending on the level of connectivity to local EMR systems, it might take a little bit of time to get that up and running, but to give an access code and give access to the system can be done in less than 24 hours. So very straightforward, very easy, and very flexible.
We can confirm that it is very easy and straightforward.
Yeah.
Torsten, thank you so much for making the time to chat with us today. I think this was very helpful. Congratulations on the really a beautifully designed platform that is hitting it on hitting the nail on the head with what clinicians are looking for. We'll have all the information that we talked about on the episode page, and please, anybody interested, please feel free to contact Torsten and his team to find out more about NeoPredix B1. Torsten, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. And as I mentioned, I'm super happy to get positive feedback. Thank you so much. And thank you for taking care of babies. This is really in my heart and my soul.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Incubator Podcast. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or the Apple Podcast website. You can find other episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or the podcast app of your choice. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us questions, comments, or suggestions to our email address, nicupodcast@gmail.com. You can also message the show on Instagram or Twitter @nicupodcast, or through our website at www.the-incubator.org. This podcast is intended to be purely for entertainment and informational purposes and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have any medical concerns, please see your primary care professional. Thank you.